Welcome to Control D, the podcast about everything and nothing. My name is Pedro.
My name is Colin Thomas Nichols.
And I'm Plowman.
And, well, first of all, let's say sorry because we are 1 week late, but we had technical issues and more. Colin here is moving houses, so he was a little bit busy, and Plowman got his computer exploding in his face. So that happened, but yes. But here we are. This is the first episode of the new era of Control D.
Control D 2.0.
Yes. In which we have new colors, new logo, new website, all that stuff. Thank you, Plowman. And in this, as we explained on the previous episode, we will talk about a specific topic, and one of us or a guest in the future will host the episode and we'll have some, like, conversation about it. So the first topic, tourism and why it sucks. I mean, you can travel. Like, I just want to add that disclaimer. Like,
you're not ever allowed to take a vacation.
It is cool for you. Yeah, it is cool for you to travel and, you know, find new cultures and all that stuff. Like, that's amazing.
Yes, find new cultures, wipe them off the face of the map. that kind of European settler mentality. That's
and another disclosure, the thing that I prepared, I'm not going to talk about some other things that are also problematic on tourism, like, as an example, people going, you know, you go on a vacation to a luxury resort and, like, everybody's super poor on the country where you are, and, like, you're not giving money to the people, you're giving money to whatever company, or, you know, all those things. I'm going to focus on a thing that's affecting us here in Portugal and Spain and, like, in other countries. Again, tourism can be a good thing for, you know, the people that travel around, because, you know, you new places and all that stuff. It's good for the countries, you know, to some extent, that receive tourism, because there's more money and, you know, cultural interchange and whatnot. But some cities, some places have been suffering greatly. Like, in Barcelona is a great example. Venice or Venezia in Italy. I'm sorry if I misspelled this, but Dubrovnik in Croatia. Because this is the place, this is one of the filming places for Game of Thrones. So everybody's going, like, you know, to check that place out. And this creates a lot of problems that we are going to talk about.
What's that saying? The poisons in the dosage or something like that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, medicine in a sufficiently high dose, those can become a poison. Yeah. Yep. Something like that.
Pretty much. Like, if you do it in moderation, it's, you know, helpful.
Yeah.
But go overboard and it's a whole different story.
Exactly. And it's, again, this is not a comparable situation to, let's say, you know, those people that, like, and again, I'm not talking about against you traveling, but, like, people that like to travel to some Asian countries or African countries, and there's that thing, like, okay, I'm going to barter with everyone because it's so rustic or whatever. And that sometimes, or a lot of times, if not all the times, kind of suck, because, like, if it's, like, sort of like a cool thing to you because, oh, I'm bartering with this person, it's so cool. But that person, that's their livelihood, and you know.
Anyway, not even, moving on. That's not something I would even consider. Like, I don't know. I'm just not, like, the bartering type, I guess. Maybe it has to do with the social anxiety that we talked about. But, like,
yes.
If there's a price tag on something, that's what it costs. Like,
exactly.
I don't care if it's handmade or if it's from, like, Walmart. Like, that is the price of that thing. And you can't talk somebody less. Like,
oh, you mean haggling. Okay, yeah. I'm sitting here and bartering. What the f***? Oh, I'm sorry, I hope to bleep that up, but I was thinking, like, bartering what, like, exchanging a watch for, like, a souvenir or something like that.
No, yeah, haggling prices.
Okay, yeah, that's not cool.
As a side note, sometimes even in video games I feel bad doing that. That's how ridiculous my anxiety goes. Like, in Witcher 3, when I have a contract and I have the option, ask for more money. I was like, no, it's fine.
Right.
It's fine. Yep.
I don't want to. It's virtual money, but I don't want to inconvenience you.
Yes. I don't want to inconvenience you, Mr. NPC.
Right.
Okay, so moving on, and just to give a little bit of perspective of what's happening in Portugal and why the government and a lot of people are so open to this new wave of tourism. That's fairly recent. We're talking in the past 5 years or so. So as an example, between January and July, the profit of the tourism sector in Portugal was above 8.9 million euro. Like in the first half of the year. So that's 12.9% more than the same period of last year. So this is a huge increase. And as you can see, Portugal is a very small country. Like, we're like 10 million people that live here. And this is happening according to government data. because there's higher prices in hotels, restaurants, and everything related to tourism. Because, of course, there's more people coming, you raise the prices. Tourism is now, this also according to government numbers, tourism is now 70% of the whole services profits. So it's more than half of our services, like in Portugal, services that Portugal offers, like in general, 70% of that is tourism.
Are you sure you quoted that number correctly? 8.9 million.
Million, yeah.
That's supposed to be like 70% of the whole services industry. That sounds like not a lot. It's like, I don't know if I'm misunderstanding something, but...
of the services offered by... Portugal as a whole, on the whole scale, 70% of it is based on tourism, like the growing economy in Portugal, in this case. And the 8.9 is like the gross profit of hotels, restaurants.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Profit, yes, not the revenue. Okay, yeah.
Continuing with the numbers, 7% of the entire working population right now. I know it doesn't sound much, but 7% of the working population is on tourism-related jobs, like restaurants, hotels, and stuff. And it's increasing. And the big difference is that Portugal was like a big hit in the summer months, and slowly it's becoming a year-long thing, where Portugal like is appealing for tourists. We have one case here, which is Algarve. It's in the very south of Portugal. And that region was, quote unquote, lost to tourism many years ago. it almost entirely lives for tourism, that region. Especially from the people from the United Kingdom. I don't know how Brexit will affect this thing. But it's mostly like, you know, it's a coastal region in the south. It's like very hot, and like almost all of it is directed to foreign tourism. That's an area of Portugal that it's been like that since the 80s or something. The difference now is that cities like Lisbon and Porto, which is the second biggest area of metropolitan area of Portugal, Porto and Gaia, they've become like the new attraction. And we kind of don't know how to deal with this, as we will learn during this episode. So a few years ago, both Lisbon and Porto started like a gentrification process.
That wonderful word.
Yes, which is
processes that nothing ever goes wrong with that.
Exactly. If any of our listeners don't know, like, gentrification is you like forcefully changing an area of a city to make it more appealing to a certain group of people.
Usually it's a low income area that you turn, you know, more appealing towards the middle class.
Exactly.
And those kinds of more wealthy families, and that results in upping, you know, prices of property and rent, and that drives out the low income families, you know, further away.
It's a subtle, not so subtle way to almost like evict a chunk of people to replace it.
It's legal mass eviction, yeah.
Exactly.
So that's like literally just driving up like rent and housing costs so that people that can't afford it are forced to move away.
Exactly. And changing some things, like, you know, you have your neighborhood, like you have grocery stores and, you know, those little convenience stores that you can get your stuff. All of that disappears for a new hip restaurant or a new like super fashion bar. And, you know, this also created a new phenomenon that we were not prepared for or used for. When I say we, I'm talking Portugal as a whole. Which is a new kind of tourist. Portugal was used to, you know, your regular tourist that, you know, books a flight, gets a hotel room and, you know, goes to visit monuments and all that stuff. We start to get the tourists like they are looking for hostels or Airbnbs. Mm. And this drove everyone like in a complete like disarray. Because of this, as I was telling, like neighborhoods started to lose their like quote-unquote soul, because they lose their traditional restaurants and stores and all that stuff to accommodate like this. It's like, you know, tourists said, oh, I want to go to that place to, you know, to check their culture and learn their culture, but I hope that they just have the things that I'm used to. So I hope
there's a McDonald's, you know? And a Starbucks.
Exactly. So cities have to adapt to that. And this led to, on the first impact was landlords to act like a sleazy pieces of filth, in the sense of they were trying to, you know, rise the prices of rents or try to legally evict people. Because when you have a contract, like the landlord cannot come to you and say like, hey, I need you to get out of here. Unless you have a timed contract, like if you have a 2-year contract, when the contract ends, like, you know.
Right.
So they start doing stuff like doing construction, working like nonstop on the building, not on your apartment, like on the building that cuts off your water, electricity, like incessant noise, things in it, hopefully trying to make you, you know, reach the decision of I need to leave. I cannot leave here. Which is horrible if you think about it. and this happens mostly to old people. Suffice to say that the center of Porto and Lisbon was mostly inhabited. I know more about Lisbon. It was mostly inhabited by old people, immigrants, and students, college students that are not from Lisbon, because that was like the cheapest. I was living this 10 years ago. I lived in the city center of Lisbon, one of the most expensive areas now. And when I lived there, was one of the most, one of the cheapest areas to live to live in. It's ridiculous to think about it. Like in 10 years, how things change. This happens. I don't know if you guys have this, like either in Bulgaria or there in Michigan, which is landlords start to prefer to, instead of, you know, if they could rent the house, like for like 2-3 years to a person, a local, to your regular prices, they decided that's not as profitable as renting the house just 2 or 3 months a year for like an incredibly high price. Like it's like we're talking about rents going from like 300 euro to 2000 euro, you know. So it's a big difference all of a sudden.
I mean, it's more of a problem in countries like ours that are like Portugal and Bulgaria that are just, they have a reputation for being cheap destinations. Yeah. And you have more and more people organizing these vacations. And instead of going to hotels, they go to like houses in like less developed areas, but it's cheaper and they just buy the whole house,
or exactly
just rent the whole house for a set amount of time, they do whatever and they go back. And that's what kind of pushing people. I mean, and on the other hand, you have that thing that Bulgaria and Portugal in particular are not exactly the most and yes, now that I need to use the term, it just floated out of my mind. they're not the wealthiest by any means countries, so it's still not a cool thing to do, but I can kind of understand it, because like small owners of such establishments, they need to make money and they can, so they just find new methods, but there's still an expense, an unexpected expense that's not on the backs of those people, of the owners, but rather on the backs of everyone else. Yeah,
exactly. And like you have cases like situations where you have either financial groups or like, you know, hotel groups or other tourism related groups or celebrities that start to buy property in Portugal. Like the most talked about case recently, of course, there's that guy, I always forget his name, Assassin's Creed, and
Michael Fassbender, and his wife Alicia Vikander. They live in Lisbon, I think.
Yep. But they, as far as, you know, tabloids and, you know, media and stuff, they are more low-key. But then, of course, you have and Eric Cantona, the football player, but, you know, I believe mostly European people will know who I'm talking about. But then the most, like, Madonna, like, that's the case. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, she demands ridiculous stuff from the city hall, and for some reason the city hall sometimes concedes. Like, she bought property, and then there's that story that she wanted parking places for her fleet of cars. And Lisbon, as we speak, I just read this yesterday on a newspaper, there are 4 cars for each parking place in Lisbon. So you can imagine how joyful it is to find a parking place in Lisbon. But I think she has like 15 or 20 cars, whatever.
Because in Lisbon. Yeah, I could see that. Right. Real quick.
And there's,
something I've just been curious about. Pedro, do you have a car?
Oh, no, nor license.
Yeah, Lindsay, just walk everywhere.
Yeah. It's like, it's been like years. Like, I was living in Bragança, which is like a very small city, so I walked everywhere. Then I went to Beja, which is even smaller than Bragança, you know, same reason. Then I went to Lisbon, which is a super big city, and I use public transportation everywhere. Now I'm actually starting to think, I would use a car, you know, adult and stuff. But yeah, I was saying, like, Madonna was like asking, like, oh, I would like to, you know, to have a place to park my cars. And then she asked, like, if she could use the parking lot of a museum. And it's not director, like the curator, or like, you know, the big boss of that museum said nope. And then she went to the city hall like, hey, I want a parking spot for my cars, and they gave her like in another the cultural center or whatever.
That's insane.
They did not give her like, she's renting those places, but
still that's still insane.
She's parking her.
That's really not how I thought that story was going to go. I thought you were going to say that she asks for permission to build a parking lot somewhere near her property.
And no, but there's
if there was a god, she would have built it, and someone immediately would have taken all of it up. So like, she but goes to unveil it, and there's already like 20 cars there. Like, the neighbors parked there.
There's another cool, not so cool story with her. So, as you know, Portugal is a very old country, and, you know, there's castles and palaces and stuff. There's a town close to Lisbon. It's like 40 minutes away. Using train, and it's Sintra, and it's like you're in a completely different world, and you don't even imagine that you're so close to Lisbon. It has a lot of palaces, and it's on the mountains and whatnot. So Madonna wanted to buy a palace there,
and like one does. You know, I feel like buying a palace.
No, but check this out. Like, this came on the news because she was like outraged. Because apparently she went to the company, like there's not one owner of the palace anymore, obviously. It's like a company that owns the thing, or several, I don't know. And apparently Madonna was trying to do a thing like, so I keep the palace, I don't pay it, but I pay for, you know, any construction that needs to be done. And like, they were like, no, that's not how it works. Like, we're not just going to hand you a palace. And like, right. And then she was like a little bit, you know, not so happy.
It's just crazy. Like the balls to just be like, I want to buy this palace. Or like, oh, this museum's parking lot. That's mine now. Like, are you kidding me?
And then, okay, other things that are affecting the city, not just with the celebrities. It came on a newspaper just the other day that in the very heart, the city center, the historical city center of Lisbon, 34% of the houses are occupied by tourists. And this is 34% is a huge number. And then you see pictures. I will send to. I hope we can post it on the, what should we call it? Totally forgot the term. The text that you write for the episode.
Oh, the show notes.
Show notes. Yes. Sorry.
It's been a while. Oh, my God.
You know, there's some neighborhoods of Lisbon that are very old. So you can imagine, like, they have very narrow streets. And then tourists apparently no, like, this is a fact. Like, they go visit those neighbors on the Segway. So you have like this huge line of Segways, and people have to, you know, if you're walking on that street, like you need to stop and like, you know, push yourself against the wall to give them space to, because I guess walking is hard. And then there's another thing. I don't actually know the true name of this, because in Portugal, that's how we call it. It's like tuk-tuk, T-U-K. Tuk-tuk. It's like a motorized thingy that works, like tourists go in and they visit the city, like, and the guy works like a guide.
So, it's a rickshaw type of thing.
Yeah, but with a motor. Yes. There are so many that sometimes it actually clogs the traffic, like people that want to go to work and, you know, or other things, because there are tourists there. And like this happens, and this is the problem with Barcelona and Venice, is people start to see the cities as like amusement parks. Because there's also another problem in those coastal cities like Lisbon is, you have like this huge cruise ship. Every now and then one stops in Lisbon Harbor, drops like 2,000 or 3,000 people, whatever the number of people. And they spend like 2 or 3 hours or 1 day in Lisbon, and they just flood immediately all the, you know, those more narrower streets and the neighborhoods. And like that always happened, but not with this frequency. Like you always have one coming by and dropping more and more and more people, more than the city can handle, in my opinion. Because again, I'm not against you taking a cruise ship. I would actually like to do that. And then this makes like parks and gardens that are, you know, those public places where you go to read a book, to smoke a cigarette, to drink beer, or just to talk with your friends or to play music. They are so overcrowded that the city hall actually needs to start, you know, building fences around them and limit the number of people that goes there at the same time, which is ridiculous because you're talking about public places in the city.
I was going to say, the one purpose of a public park to gate it off and make it inaccessible.
Exactly. And then there's another ridiculous case. So Lisbon has also an old tram system. Speaking of public transportation. Of course, they have like modern trams that are, you know, all fancy and stuff. But in the more historical areas, they keep using the very old trams. Of course, they do maintenance and all that stuff that people use for their day to day. Also, because the newer trams are bigger and they have like multiple carts, you know, it's almost like a train. So they don't fit in the more narrow streets. And there's a specific tram line, which is the line 28. which goes through the, I took that more than once. It goes through the historical center. And a lot of people that live in those neighborhoods take that. And now you see the lines. You need to wait like hours to be able to get in the tram because like the tourists are like, oh my God, this is so, you know, picturesque. I don't know if that's a word in English. And you're like, you know, you're leaving work and you want to take the tram to go home. And there's like this line and you know that you will need to wait at least 3 hours for you to be like on the top of the line to be able to actually get in the tram, and that's ridiculous.
I don't know if this is my, if I'm like all bureaucratic minded or something, but to me this can be solved with licenses or just permits, like an ID card that shows here that's where I live here, so I get like I get to go on first and the tourists get to go second. But I guess, I mean, obviously, I'm not saying that, poof, a permit, and then everything is solved. I'm just, you know.
No, I know. I know. I'm actually talking about.
That's an idea. Yeah.
Residents should have first serve.
Yep.
Yeah. Or at least they could put more trams on that line.
Yeah.
Like, at least. But anyway.
Well, and then, that's, if I may make an analogy, I don't know if things work exactly the same way, but usually cities have this in traffic management, they have this horrible idea, and especially in the United States, that in order to alleviate traffic, they just add more lanes to the roads. But that doesn't really lower the traffic. That just makes it worse because it gives more more space, so more people start using it immediately. And the effects of lowering the traffic are just minuscule for a little while, and they're immediately overtaken by this effect of the sworn amount of traffic. So adding more trams could may well work in the same way, that you want to add more trams in order to alleviate the load per tram, but that might actually bring in more people who want to use them.
Or at least have like one tram, like on the same line, you know, just for residents, and like two trams for, you know, tourists.
That's
just
what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
License. Yeah.
Another thing that happened, this I know it's happening in Lisbon. I'm not sure about Porto. This is more like an healthcare related situation. There has been like an infestation of cockroaches and bed bugs. Cockroaches, it's not something super new in Lisbon, because, you know, it's a big city close to the sea. My first apartment in Lisbon, the apartment itself was great. It was all renewed and stuff. But the building had an infestation of cockroaches, and it was ridiculous. But yes, bed bugs, it's not a common thing here. And now it's a thing in Lisbon. Which sucks terribly.
I wonder why that might be.
Also,
no, I actually wonder why that might be. Like, I get cockroaches, they live around trash, they feed on trash and scraps, like rats, but and pigeons, but like bed bugs.
I don't know, and I don't want to generalize, but Lindsay told me more than once that bed bugs are more of a problem, like in the United States. And I don't know if people traveling from there, like, because we're not talking about like a few hundred people, like we are talking about thousands of people sometimes, like every day, coming and getting in and out of the city, and from other places. So this is, I think, more of an increase of, you know, people from many different places getting in the city. And
yeah, I think it just comes with an increase of traffic, because you've got people that come from everywhere, and especially if like somebody from the US is traveling there, because then we've got a hotel that we stay in before the airport, and then we've got the airport, and then we go and it's like at any point, I mean, the more places that you stay, the more chance you have of getting acquiring bed bugs, and then
exactly
releasing them your horde.
I was thinking like not in the right direction. I was thinking about why would they start breeding there more, instead of, you know, thinking about that maybe they weren't, you know, bread they were brought over. So yeah, that's my misunderstanding.
And this, of course, like the cities start to be a bit more, you know, like more trash. And then you have people, you know, just all getting, you know, drunk and let's break things and stuff. So the city centers, the historical city centers, get a bit more damaged. This is leading to a reaction from, okay, so we have big financial groups. There's an insurance agency in Portugal called Fidelidade, which is the thing in the United States, from what I learned, called Fidelity. Even the logo is the same, that it's buying buildings. And when they buy the buildings, they just go to people and say like, so, okay, the building is ours now. The contract that you had doesn't work anymore, so please leave. So people are being evicted, mostly in Lisbon. And this is pushing extremely hard and fast the population of Lisbon to the suburbs. And this is creating the... A sentiment like you see that in Venice, in Barcelona, in Lisbon, and Porto, and like many more cities against this massive wave of tourism. So it's not against people visiting, it's more against like this, how this is happening. Because as we speak, it's starting to affect, and this is will be my final point, this is starting to affect other things in the rest of the country that I just noticed now. So people that want to go out to study to another city, it's becoming increasingly hard. And this is to give a perspective on things, because I was just reading on how it is to go to be a college student in Lisbon. And I was a college student in Lisbon between 2007. I was in Lisbon between 2007 and I came back in 2011 or 10 or I don't know, but yes. And my family is not rich at all. But yes, nowadays, the minimum wage in Portugal is 580 euro and the medium wage is 846, around that, like it varies a little bit. You have, okay, when you're a student, I don't know if in your countries it works like that. Normally, if you're a college student, you can either stay in like the dorm things of the colleges, but most people don't like it. You can just rent a room. Like there's the landlord that has an apartment or a house and they rent the rooms to students.
No, I've never heard of that.
And the prices of, I mean, of course, you rent the room. You can, of course, use the bathrooms, the kitchen, and it depends on the house. Sometimes you have a living room or other times all the rooms are rooms. You don't have like a living room. But it's fine. It works fine. But anyways, giving this information, if you think that the price that they are asking for a room in Lisbon and Porto, the most expensive cities, can go from 250 to 600 euro per month, and adding that, like the bills that you need to pay, like food and stuff, like, you know, you go out at night and like books and the tuition and all that stuff, this adds to a budget, a monthly budget for a student in Lisbon that can easily reach 900 euro a month. And this is ridiculous. Like, as I told, like, if you have both of your parents in the minimum wage, they get an income a little bit above 1,000 euro a month. So they cannot give 900 for their kid a month, you know, to stay in Lisbon. And the problem is this has been spreading to the rest of the country. In smaller cities in the interior, I can name some like Évora, Aveiro, which is not the interior, it's south of Porto a little bit. Students have been having difficulty in finding houses, or because they either are expensive or they don't exist. And this has been leading to actual protests in the streets and students taking actions. Like in Porto, they decided to, all the students of like a particular school, a number of them decided to sleep on the streets. Like as a symbolic gesture to show like, hey, we have no place to live. And this has been affecting other, like in our in Bragança, like we've been trying to find a house for months. We are kind of giving up on that idea now, because there's no house to rent. And when we find houses that are, you know, available, they are very expensive. So this is a thing that slowly is affecting like the entire country. And it there's no signs of this ending anytime soon.
I mean, it's just going to get
just
worse,
today,
really.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just today, I read that 120 new hotels are expected to open in the next 2 years. Web Summit just signed a contract that will stay in Portugal for 10 more years. And that's a thing that, you know, those like kind of Silicon Valley vibe thingy. You look at San Francisco, like the rents are impossible there now. So Web Summit are staying in there. It's staying in Lisbon for 10 more years. Google is, you know, looking at Lisbon. Amazon is looking at Porto. So you see those big tech companies planning to move in, which is a double-edged sword, because on one hand, it's good for high-tech jobs and all that stuff. On the other hand, it's like one more bomb for housing and all those problems that we face.
At least in the case of San Francisco, it's one of the biggest drivers of gentrification, as these tech jobs, even at an entry level, are usually very well paid, or at least against the country's average. So
yeah,
that drives owners to forcefully renovate buildings and, you know, initiate that gentrification process. And that, again, once they renovate, they push the rent prices up and the low-income families cannot afford it, so they have to leave in order to make space for the tech job employees.
Yeah. It's, you know, I told that Portugal has roughly 10 million people. And the last year, I think there it was like the, yes, in 2017, 20 million tourists came to Portugal. So you see, like the double of the people that live in Portugal came to visit Portugal. This in 2017. This is data from 2017. It's expected that this year it's going to probably be a bit more, next year a bit more. So
if you've ever wanted to feel what it would be like to be an animal in a zoo and get a bunch of random strange people come and look at you and just prod you and stuff, that's probably what it feels like living in a city like Lisbon or Barcelona or London.
Yeah, and it's like even in our small town, we live very close to the castle. And like during the summer, I would very rarely listen to Portuguese in the streets, which it's amazing and weird at the same time. It's like a lot of, I mean, Spanish people, it's normal. We are like 20 minutes away from Spain. But like people from Northern Europe, a lot of them started to come here. And there's a, the only thing that's been worrying me more. It's cool to stay on this house because we still pay a very low rent. But all the buildings in our street are under construction now, or, you know, reconstruction. And I just hope that our landlord doesn't sell this to, like, you know. But yes, so this was my the topic for this week, tourism and how it's impacting Portugal. I don't know if you guys have anything else to add.
I mean, I was gonna try to bring some of my personal experiences in, but it's not that side of it as more as it is like the cruise ship side of it. It was there one specifically. We went on a cruise and we stopped at Mexico, and we were in the Yucatan, and we took a bus ride to Tulum. So some Mayan ruins. We had like a tour guide and everything. Mm-hmm. Everything was like paid for, which is really cool. It felt a little weird, I don't know, to be like a group of middle-class white people being shown around, you know, Mexico. It's like, I don't know. It felt a little strange. But I got really upset when after we like we visited the ruins, then we went to a cenote and we went swimming around a little bit. And then on the way back, there were some like outlying, I don't want to say huts, but kind of like, you know, sort of very poor housing on this trail back to like wherever the bus was or whatever. And there were like people like just living, like doing their thing, you know, doing their laundry or cooking food or whatever. Yeah. And we're walking by. And some of the other people in the group that we were in were like taking photos of them, like with their camera. And like, oh, I gotta, you know, you've got like three kids that are just standing in the doorway watching this like group of 15 white people walk by. And this guy's like taking a picture with his like $700 camera. And I just like wanted to slap it out of his hand. Like, these are people. I understand. Like, if you're in your house and there's somebody walking down the street and they're taking a picture of you, like, that's going to feel kind of bad. Like, that's not, I don't know. And then the other thing that I can kind of relate to is right now we live close to a city called Grand Haven, which is right on Lake Michigan. And it is probably the biggest tourist spot around me, especially in the summertime, because all the beaches, you know, right on Lake Michigan Beach. And then it's a sort of very wealthy town, I suppose. Like, all of the houses are like $500,000 or $1 million or whatever, because it's all beachfront property. But especially during, there's a 2-week festival for Coast Guard, for the United States Coast Guard. It's called Coast Guard Festival. And I will refuse.
Very creative.
Yeah. I refuse to drive anywhere near Grand Haven during that, like, 3 weeks, because it's just insane. Yeah. There's so many people, there's so many tourists. It's just nobody knows how to drive. Everybody isn't going the speed limit. And like, I don't know. That's the only way that I can relate. We don't have really, like, at least not that I'm aware of, and maybe that's my privilege speaking, but we don't have any, like, you know, housing districts or anything where people are being ushered out for higher prices so that they can make room for tourists. I feel like that's already happened in Grand Haven, and we're just kind of dealing with the aftermath of it.
Yeah. Here we're dealing with the explosion.
Right.
we should make an episode in the future about urban sprawl and this whole concept of, you know, displacing people. Like, more detail about it. But, yeah, you know, more on that in the future.
And, if no one has anything else to add, let's move on to the Bobby Awards. So, this week, the Bobby Awards, it's related to the topic at hand, tourism. So, I mean, that's not the Bobby Award. I'm sorry.
Anybody that's a tourist.
The Bobby itself. the Bobby nomination itself. It's not for one person in particular, but it's for a thing they do, which is balconying. I don't know.
I'd never heard of this until you had pointed it out.
I honestly, I'm not sure how this started. I assume a YouTube video. So balconying is basically you jumping from, you know, the balcony of your hotel room to the swimming pool. And I guess someone did that on YouTube, and people tend to forget that a lot of those trick videos that you see on YouTube are, you know,
staged
or
highly stupid. And you shouldn't do them in the first place. But I think it may have been a movie.
Or that.
That's my best guess. Like a party movie or someone jumped and someone else liked that and wanted to try it. And, you know, there we go. A trend was started.
Yeah. And it's, so people have died from this because, so
it's weird that you don't have to explain why, because it's so obvious. Like, someone fell and just smashed their head open and just destroyed themselves and died.
And but, people, you know, are drunk and that they jump off the roofs, or because it doesn't have to be exactly from, you know, a balcony. It's a high place in a hotel that you jump to the swimming pool. And sometimes they don't think that maybe the swimming pool is not deep enough for such a high jump, you know, so you can still smash your face on the floor, even if you hit the water
or close enough to the building, so exactly you land short.
So it's not okay. Of course, we don't need to go and explain why you die if you jump off the top of a building. but this is still happening to the point that have been campaigns made by governments. I'm thinking of the. I'm reading, in fact, the Foreign Office of the Spanish government did like the videos and stuff telling people, please don't jump off high places. You can die. but still, it's still happening. According to Wikipedia, in 2018, there were 6 victims of balconing accidents. British, Irish, and one of them was French. 3 of them died and the others were injured.
Of course they were. I mean, it's again, you mentioned that it's this thing about being drunk, and it's more of a phenomenon, again, in these kinds of countries like Portugal, Spain, Bulgaria, and all the others along the southern coast of Europe and Asia. It's mostly the low-income countries where young people go to get hammered for cheap, not spend a lot of money. And they're young and they're full of, usually guys full of testosterone, and they do stupid stuff like that sometimes end up costing their life. Yeah.
Because if you think about it, like the price for, and this is more to Colin, the price for what you would pay for a night out where you would drink, not to get super drunk, but like to be just a little bit happy, for what you would pay that, in the United States, in Portugal, you would, be in a coma. when you get to places, and especially if you're out of Lisbon and Porto, like the more cheapest places where you like, you can get a little, like a glass of, like a dose of whiskey for like €1.20. Which is probably like €1.50 or something like that.
That's pretty cheap.
I don't know the conversion rate now. So those tourists come here and it's like, oh my God. And, but anyway.
And here the minimum wage is €208, significantly lower. I think it's pretty much the lowest in Europe. So you can imagine even worse, the situation. And we have all those... coastal resorts that fill up with hundreds of thousands of people, mostly students, again, who are here just to get hammered on a budget.
If you're listening to this episode and you have anything to say, like if you live in a place that you've been, been affected by tourism,
hear your
or if you're a tourist, or if you want to travel, even if you want to travel around and you want to just comment, just give us your opinion. And before we go, we can announce already what will be the topic for next, not next week, 2 weeks.
The next fortnight? Episode.
Then, yes, that's easy. It's a complicated thing. I'm going to give the word to Colin.
Yeah, so in 2 weeks I'll be hosting, and I'm going to do an episode on like the process of filmmaking, of like how a movie is made, from like the start with the script all the way to editing and release. Just kind of generally go over through some of the different aspects of production, share some stories of some ridiculous moments of sets that I have been on. And hopefully, if you have any questions about, anything about movies or how do they do this kind of thing, or how do they shoot a scene like this or whatever, feel free to ask and I'll look through them and I'll answer them on the next episode.
Yep. So thank you so much for all of your support. And I hope you enjoyed this episode and this new series. And we'll see you in a fortnight.
And don't haggle prices when you're on vacation.
Yes.
And don't jump over balconies, please.
And just be kind when you visit other places,
Yes.
So, okay. Bye.
Bye.